guys, welcome back to the Sacred Cooking Podcast. This is Lottie, and I will be your host today. So, I have been sat here trying to decide what to do an episode on. And I have a couple of things that I have been mulling over and thinking about, but none of them really felt quite right. And I have a huge list of topics and ideas and titles or potential titles and things on my phone. So I'm sat there looking through that and I still didn't really feel drawn to anything in particular. And then I thought what I would talk about today is my childhood and specifically growing up as a medium, what it was like, some of my experiences and how I got to where I am now. This is something that people ask me a lot about, and I usually don't really have time to go in depth, you know, because they're there for a reading or whatever. It's usually just not like perfect timing to be able to say, well, let me tell you, it all started. But I get that people are interested, and I have kind of an unusual background, I guess, in some ways. I grew up in a family of mediums. Not everyone does that. So I thought today I would just talk a little bit about it, talk about what it was like for me growing up in that setting, what it was like for me being a psychic and a medium as a child, and how I developed, some challenges and things that I faced as I was growing up, all that good stuff. So well, first of all, I want to say I got my hair cut and I really like it. I go through this cycle where it's, you know, every couple of years, I want to say it's like every 3 years or so, I cut all my hair off. So, or most of it. So I'll grow my hair really long and then I'll just suddenly be like, I really want to cut all my hair off. And so I go and get it cut. Most of the time at the hairdressers, I've had a couple of times where I've just like picked up the scissors and chopped my own hair, but usually then I had to get someone to go over it anyway to make it all neat and tidy and all of that. So I recommend doing it at the hairdressers if you can, or at least get someone who knows how to cut hair. I do not know how to cut hair. So yeah, I've cut all my hair off and I'm really excited. I now have a bob, and it's probably about chin length, I guess. The back is a little bit shorter, but it's long enough to be able to get up in a teeny tiny ponytail. So yeah, I really need to be able to tie my hair up, even if I just have a tiny bit of hair, because I think I have this like psychological thing where if I feel like my hair is down and it's all around everywhere, it makes me feel stressed. So I need to be able to tie it up, even if it's like tying this up is really not doing that much. It's for my brain. It helps my brain. But yeah, when you next see me, if you come in for a reading, I've got short hair now. So yeah, it's funny too because it looks black, like I've always had very dark hair, like dark brown hair, but usually it's, I don't know, I always thought it was more like a lighter brown, and then now that it's short and I've got like, it's just the, you know, top part, I don't know what I'm saying, but it looks almost black, like it looks so dark, and I hadn't realized it was that dark before. So if I basically feel like I have black hair now, which is, I haven't had black hair since I was probably 16. Baby goths coming out here. I started dyeing my hair when I was like 13, and I would always dye it either black or red. Yeah, because those are, as you know, the true goth colours. Oh, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, I haven't had black or, like, hair that looks this dark in forever. So it's, I keep looking in the mirror and I'm like, this looks so odd to me. But, like, in a nice way, it looks kind of strange. And I have bangs now, or a fringe, as we call it in the UK. Yeah, I haven't had a fringe in about 10 years either. It's funny because I feel like I've like gone back to things that I used to like, but I'm bringing it forward into where I am now. And in a way, it's almost like I get to reclaim those parts of my image and bring them into like a part of myself where I feel comfortable, because the last time I had these things, like, it was during a difficult time of my life. And it, like, it's not really a huge deep thing, I don't think, you know. It's like, oh yeah, I like that I have a fringe again, and my forehead has a friend. But there is something about it that feels like it's reclaiming something about what I used to, how I used to express myself, and like being able to bring it into now. So yeah, I'm excited. You can also see it on my Instagram if you want to look. I love looking at people's new haircuts, so if you want to look at mine, I'm happy to share it. So I'm the Sacred Cocoon on Instagram. Yeah, come check it out. Come check out my new freshly cut hair. But anyway, to get into the topic for today, growing up as a medium, growing up in a psychic family, what was it like? What did we do? It was, it's funny because I totally get why it's something that's interesting to people, because it's so, you know, you don't hear that every day. And it's funny because I look back on it and I just, quite often I'm like, well, it was just normal, like, that was just my everyday thing, and it wasn't this big mystical thing or anything like that. Like, it was just a really normal thing. But I get the interest in it, and I know I would be interested in hearing it, like, from other people, from their experience. So I do want to go ahead and talk about it a little bit and get into it, and hopefully, please forgive this indulgent episode. And I've been trying to stick more to like tips and advice and guidance and things, but I think it's nice to be able to share things and share like these parts of myself. And you know, when we listen to people talk and we watch their videos or whatever it is, I really like to get to know the person. So yeah, I'm hoping you will enjoy this too. But anyway, I was born on the 4th of January 1990 in Manchester, UK, so United Kingdom, England. And my dad's side of the family is where my psychic abilities, psychic gifts, proclivity, whatever you want to call it, that's where it comes from. So it goes back, to my knowledge, as far back as my great-grandfather. And it kind of came straight down the line. It didn't skip anyone, which I've heard, you know, certain people say, oh well, like, my grandma had it and then my mum doesn't have it, or my dad doesn't have whatever, and then now I have it. But that didn't happen to me. It just hit everyone all the way down the line to me. It's interesting because I'm not sure if my cousins have it. So my dad's brother's sons, he has 3 sons, and I don't know if any of them have it. I've not heard anything about that. And they weren't as involved in it when we were kids either as I was. So I'm not entirely sure if like it skipped them or not. I don't really know. Also, I think that everyone has psychic ability. I think it's an intrinsic human trait that we have. It's just part of being here as humans. It's just whether we develop it or not. And I think people have different sensitivities and things like that, but yeah, so I'm an only child, and I've been able to see and hear things and feel things for longer than I can remember. Like, my parents have stories of me doing things that I don't even remember doing, and they were like, that's clearly what that is. Like, talking to people, saying that there were certain people that would come to me, certain people in my room, they would say that there was like a lady that used to sit on top of my wardrobe that I would talk to all the time, which to me sounds terrifying, but apparently I wasn't scared of her as a child, so it must have been fine. And they have stories of like things that I saw and was you know, was scary to me from before I can remember too. Like, there was one instance where there was a spirit that would come up at the side of my bed, which, no thank you. I don't remember it at all, but my dad would always say, oh, you just have to punch them on the nose, like a shark, right? Like, is that really a thing with sharks? I don't know. I don't want to punch a shark, but I guess... let's not go into that. I don't want to punch a shark. I'm never going to put myself in a situation, hopefully, you know, where I have to potentially think about punching a shark, because I don't want to punch a shark. But anyway, my dad would say that that works for spirits and ghosts too. If something's scaring you, tell them to go away and then punch them in the face. And apparently I did that. Like, I ran into their room. I was probably like 2 or something. And I was like, I punched him in the face. I must have been a little bit older because I think we'd moved out, so I must have been like 3. Yeah, so I've always been able to see, I've always been able to hear things, and like my baptism photos, I was baptized in the spiritualist church, so I was raised spiritualist, baptized in the spiritualist church. What was I saying? Oh yeah. my parents said that the photos from the day weren't usable, basically, because there were so many like shadows and shapes and like spirits in them, basically, that they just kind of took over the pictures. Like, I've never seen pictures from it, so I have no idea, but yeah, they always said that like they basically weren't usable because there was too much interference in them, which was just like the whole family going out to party, I guess. They were like, we got another one. So yeah, I grew up with that being very normal and very accepted, that there's things that you see that not everyone can see. You know, there are people that have passed over, there's, you can pick up on energy, a feeling, a hunch that you have, yeah, that's real. All of that kind of stuff was real in my house, which was not to say that they indulged everything as being, well, you know, you have this thing, so that's definitely because you're psychic. You know, they were, you still, I think as a child, we still have fears about things that come from, like, they don't come from ghosts. And so, you know, they were good about like helping me to deal with things like that. I was very, very nervous as a child, and it's funny because my dad always says it's like I wasn't scared of spirits until I knew that there was something to be scared of, which I don't know if that makes sense, but it makes sense to me. Like, I think when it was just me in my room and I'm in my crib or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, there's the lady who sits on my wardrobe and I'm just going to talk to her, and here's this person who I always talk to, and all of that, and it was fine. And it was only, like, I guess as I got a bit older and started to realize that other people were scared of these things that I became nervous about them. Which, that was his... perception about it, and it makes sense to me. I did struggle a lot with night terrors as a child, and that was, I was really young, like probably not even 5, and we kind of eventually figured out that it was someone trying to get a message through to my mom and trying to get it through me, and it got scrambled, basically, which can happen with spirits, that they're trying to give us a message and it gets kind of twisty in our head, or the way we're perceiving it. Usually I would say that is earthbound spirits, that's ghosts, it's not. So I distinguish between ghosts and spirit. Spirit is if you've crossed over, ghosts is if you haven't. And not everyone makes that distinction. Some people will call people that have crossed over, still call them ghosts, but to me a ghost is something that is stuck here for whatever reason. You know, it's not crossed over. So that's what I think that was too. But oh my god, that was so scary. I can still remember that dream, which is an unusual thing about night terrors, which kind of tended to suggest that it was something other than that, because from what I've always read and understood, night terrors aren't usually something that you remember. But I still remember that. I used to have it a lot when I was ill, and as a child I was sick almost all of the time, so that wasn't fun. But my dad really tried to, and my nana, because we lived above my nana, really tried to help me to figure it out as a kid, but I struggled with it. I was so sensitive to things, and when you're a little kid and you've got, you know, spirits that are, for one, they're a spirit of a grown-up to begin with, and then who knows how long they've been around, and they're a ghost, and, you know, so they don't really have, I think of it as a lot of the time they don't think of what's appropriate or what's, you know, what might just be so scary to a child. They're just trying to get something across and they don't think about it. It's like, I can see why I was really scared of it and why it was hard for me growing up with that. It was difficult, and for a long time I think I saw it much more as a curse than a gift. Like, I really didn't generally, when I was little, think of it that much as, oh, this is a cool thing. It was more like, oh, all these extra things for me to be scared of, great. but yeah, my parents did try to protect me as much as they could, and I have no doubt that they definitely did protect me. Like, things that I saw, I'm sure, as that little flashing psychic beacon child, it could have been a lot worse if my dad and my family hadn't kind of had some barricades in the way to protect me. But then when I was maybe 8, my nana and my parents took me to a medium show, you know, where they like stand on the stage and give messages and things. They would take me to the local gathering for that, but I don't remember this either. But apparently they had to stop taking me because I would point out that the person on stage was wrong, like that they were giving the message to the wrong person or they weren't getting the message correctly, and here's this 7-year-old precocious child standing up saying, nope, this is for you, that's wrong. Super rude. Like, it's funny in hindsight, but that is so, I can't imagine how disheartening that must have been for the grown-up medium standing on the stage to have a little child stood there going, you're wrong. But you know how kids are. So it wasn't right, and I deeply apologize to that person. I think about that sometimes and I'm like, that is just terrible. Like, come on, man. Little Lottie, have some kindness for this person. But anyway, they ended up stopping taking me because I think it was like, it just was uncomfortable. And, you know, probably made the medium feel really bad. So they stopped taking me to that. And then so running concurrently with, you know, kind of asking, sometimes I would ask my nana about things, I would ask my dad about things, and they would tell me. I was also really interested in that we had a New Age shop, or, you know, like a spiritual witchy shop in town, and I basically lived in there. My nana would take me in there all the time, and I would just spend forever in there looking at everything. And I remember being really drawn to the books about, like, ghosts and spirits and people that have crossed over and things, like trying to understand it from an outside kind of perspective. And in my family, it was interesting too, because we've had it, you know, for a long time. Like, my dad can remember from when he was a child them having a violent poltergeist in their house. Then he can remember seeing my granddad, which was his dad, my granddad's brother, stood at the bottom of their stairs in his uniform, and then telling my granddad and him saying that, yeah, he passed away today. You know, we just got the news or whatever. So my dad could remember back to him being a child, things happening to him, and him seeing things. But growing up, it just... we didn't really talk about it, like, all the time. It wasn't... It definitely wasn't a 24/7, like, this is all we talk about kind of thing. And I think it was really, like, my family kind of cautioned against letting spirit run your life. Like, your life shouldn't just be about that, because otherwise you end up giving over all of your time and all of your life to, yeah, maybe you're helping people and giving messages and things, but you need to have time to be you too, you know. And so I think they tried really hard to keep it balanced for me. And then also because I was in the hospital a lot, I think they sort of... It must have been challenging. I really think it must have been challenging to have a super sensitive child who's picking up on stuff, who's also, you know, physically not strong and not really healthy, and dealing with that and trying to, like, keep everything balanced and not... Yeah, it was hard for them, I think. And kudos to them, because they never... showed that to me. Like, they were always so loving and so caring and treated me like as I wished. I can't wish that they had treated me any different. Like, they have always been so loving and everything, but I can't imagine how hard it was to bring me up for a variety of reasons, but not least of which because I'm picking up on this, that, and every other dead person in the general vicinity, you know. So, as I remember too, that my family would have what they called circle, downstairs in my nana's house, and they would have it like every Saturday or something, and I was not allowed to be involved with that until I was probably maybe 12, and I desperately wanted to go. Like, I remember standing at the door, like, creeping downstairs and standing at the door and trying to listen to what they were talking about. but, yeah, they didn't involve me in, like, doing the work, basically, until they thought I was old enough to sit in. And even then, it was my choice of whether I wanted to or not. And it was my choice of whether I wanted to continue. I did get involved with it when I was 12 or 13 for a little while. So we would have these, like... weekly meetings, and I did start going, but it turned out to be too much for me. It was really heavy. Like, I would pick up a lot on people that were, you know, sad and trying to get messages through, and it was just really difficult. It ended up being something that I didn't like, so they didn't make me do it. It wasn't required. And I do remember my cousins being sat in on a couple of those, so I guess maybe they were involved a little bit. My uncle was like the big deal in the family, I think, after my granddad, because my granddad passed when I was like one. And they always described my uncle, which was my dad's brother, as being, I guess, the strongest, or having like the... he was just the one that kind of dealt with a lot of things. So and they were his sons. So this is really rambling. I'm not trying to remember things. But, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting how things happen. But anyway, when I was, yeah, you know, 12 or 13, I wasn't really interested in it, or it was too much for me. And so they said, you know, you don't have to come, you don't have to do it. So I stopped. And then in my teens... So, I had a boyfriend, and full disclosure, I started dating young, and I started dating too young, and that's a whole thing that I'm not going to get into, because it's not really relevant, and I'm not sure I want to talk about that on the podcast. Anyway, so I had a boyfriend from when I was almost 15 to when I was 19. And it was bad, folks. Okay, so he was I just describe him as like a magnet. He was, like a magnet, and not for good things. Like, he attracted every bad thing, every bad energy would just like flock towards him. And there was lots of different reasons, but I think a lot of it was like liking the attention. It just creeps me out even thinking about it. But anyway, it wasn't good. And so during those years, I mean, those were hard years anyway, for many different reasons. It was not a good relationship. It was not a healthy relationship in any way, shape or form. And that was definitely part of it. But we kind of had this thing where we could share the things that were happening in that sense, that I don't think he had ever had anyone that understood. So he had grown up being able to see and hear and pick up on things too, but he didn't have anyone in his family who really understood it. So it was kind of him on his own. So when we got together, it was like we were just bouncing back and forward, and then we were teenagers, so it's like super traumatic. A tendency to go towards things that are kind of darker and scarier. It all concocted to just be, it was just bad. And some of the things that happened during that time I wouldn't wish them on, I wouldn't wish that relationship on anyone, to be honest, but I wouldn't wish anything like it to happen to anyone. Like, there are things that happened in those years that are just so, and were, and still are, so genuinely terrifying to me that I don't know how I dealt with it, some of it. And that was like ghosts. So it's like that it can get bad. It can get really bad, really negative, difficult to deal with. You know, I think there's a lot of things around ghosts that's like, oh, they can be scary, but it's okay, they're not that scary. It's like, no, imagine your scariest thing, and then it's scarier than that. Like, that, it can get that bad, and it can get where it's affecting you badly. And so there was so much of that going on, and it was like every day for 5 years almost, you know. So it was bad. Like, I basically shut it off, or I tried to shut it off after that. So I managed to get myself out of that relationship finally when I was 19. Then in my next relationship on from that, the person I was with also had sensitivity, and they knew about spirits and things like that, but they weren't really super interested in it, and I was completely a-okay with that. Like, I didn't want it, and I tried to shut it out. Like, I really, really strongly felt this is not a gift. I do not want this. Like, I tried to close it down and shut it off. And honestly, I think that's what happens to people a lot of the time, because I think that children, like most children in my experience, can see and hear, and they're psychic just naturally, because I think we all are. But usually something happens that we decide, nope, that's not for me, I'm going to turn it off, or we're told, you know, enough times, nope, that's not real, it's imaginary, you know. However we're taught to shut it out and turn it off, we're taught to do that, and we do it. But because it was normal in my house and everyone could do it, it was never taught. I never got taught that it wasn't real, which I'm glad, because, you know, it's a huge part of my work now, and it's a huge part of my life. But the flip side of that was, you can't just say that the scary monsters under the bed are not real, you know, or the thing in the closet that looks scary. It's like, if you're going to acknowledge that these things really can happen and they can be really there and really be real, you also have to then acknowledge that the scary things can also be real and also be there. So I kind of got to the point when I was 19 or 20 where it's like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to do this. I'm not interested. And it's interesting, so my paths cross and wind around each other a lot, because I started reading tarot when I was like 12 or 13, and I never stopped reading, and I picked up runes along the way and charms and all that kind of thing, and I was always interested in divination. But to me, divination was not intrinsically linked with spirits. And I think at that time, if you would ask me, like, where's the information coming from, I couldn't really have had any kind of solid answer or idea. But to me, in my head, they were not linked to each other. So I didn't have an issue with doing tarot and you know, being on my witchy path and all of that. Like, they didn't cross over for me at that point, which they do now. So I get a lot of information from spirit guides now during readings, which is not to say that it all comes from guides, because I don't know that I would say that. Maybe it does, but who knows, you know, psychic information and exactly where it comes from. I would say it comes from spirit as a general term of the where the energy is from, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's from a specific person. But I guess that's something we can get into later or at a later date, because otherwise I'm just going to go off on that tangent. But it wasn't until I was, how old was I? Maybe I was, it gets foggy, probably 20. So when I was 20, I ended up going to a festival with a friend, and that kind of started to, like, I was like peeking at it and going, still not super sure about that. And then we also did a trip to Glastonbury together. So my friend and I, Steph, we used to go to Glastonbury together. We would just take trips like out of the blue. Hey, you want to go to Glastonbury? Yeah, let's go. We ended up staying in this this place, and it was all angels. So my Steph and I at that time were like, angels, whatever. Like, I was super derisive about angels, and I actually do believe in them, and I work with them now, so there's that. But anyway, at that point in time, I was like, angels, whatever, not interested. We ended up staying in this place that, like, everything in the entire apartment, it was like a little apartment off to the side of the main house, and everything in it was angels. It was just wild. Like, the amount of angels stuff going on there was something else, man. And I kind of started to be like, I feel like it got swapped basically by angels, and they were like, hey, we're here and you will work with us. Like, this would, I don't care if you don't like us and you think that we're fluffy or whatever, you know. Which, look at actual angel lore, it's not all fluffy, sweet and cute and whatever. So that started to kind of open me up to it a little bit more too. And then also being in Glastonbury, you can't really avoid the it's a very, you know, spiritual place. I don't think you can really avoid that aspect of it. I mean, I guess you could. I didn't. Well, he didn't. And it started to help me open up to it a little bit. But still, I was like, still not sure. So then it wasn't until a couple years ago. It was before I moved to America full time. So it was probably like 2015, I want to say. I was, no, wait. Yeah, I'm like, how old am I? So in 2015, I want to say, I was talking to my friend Raven on Skype, and we got talking, and she was / is a medium. So that is Raven McGill, and I love her. Raven, if you're listening, I love you. And she started to talk to me. We were on Skype, and we were talking about experiences that we had had, and things that had made us, like, kind of shut down on our gifts and what helped us to reopen them. And I was, like, super resistant to reopening. I was like, I still don't really want to do it. And I can't even remember exactly what she said to me now, but she said something that, like, put a crowbar in that door. Like, it really did something. It opened the door more than it had been for years at that point. And made me realize that, you know, this is a gift. I can use it as a gift, but I have to decide how I want to use it. And maybe, you know, don't swear off it and close those doors because you were scared. Like, don't let yourself be scared off it by someone else, basically. Like, the things that happened with my ex were, you know, really genuinely terrible and scary. But the way that my dad always explained it to me afterwards was, because he didn't know a lot of what was going on at the time, but afterwards kind of described it to me as that the things that were not there for me, they were there for him, but I was in the line of fire, so I got hit by it too, you know. It doesn't matter if like it was there for me, I was that sensitive and I was right there with them and also cared about that person who's having all these things going on with it. Like, of course it's going to affect me too. So those things weren't there for me, but it didn't stop me from experiencing them. And so, yeah, Raven really helped me realize, am I going to let this be it? Like, is this going to be it and I'm not going to do that work anymore? Or am I going to try and, like, embrace it? Like, embrace the fact that it's scary, but realize that, you know, I can put down boundaries now. I can say what's okay and what isn't. And that I can let myself see that world and experience that world without being scared by it. And so that really started me on this path of, like, opening up to things and really, like, allowing it to come through again and allowing myself to experience it again. And when I look back on it now, it's so strange to me because it's, like, I work with spirit guides every single day, and being psychic, having those things, having that connection with spirit, having those, you know, things be able to be shown or being able to understand them is such a huge part of me, and it always has been. And yeah, I was trying to distance myself and shut it off for so long, and I don't think I ever could completely shut it down, but it's like I was completely willing to do it. But now when I look at my work and how I do it, and that I'm so happy with it and I love it, and this is why I'm here and what I'm supposed to be doing, and I look at that and I think, how did I go from, like, how did I get here? And like, it still baffles me sometimes. Like, I know I've forgotten a lot of things, I think, but it's just so odd to me that I could end up here doing the work that I'm doing as a professional, you know, I'm a professional reader, but I'm also, I would say at this point, professional psychic. Like, that's my job. It's my work. It's why I'm here, to help people heal and help to bring through messages from the cards and all of that kind of thing. And looking back, it's like it's been a strange and twisting path, but I'm glad for where it's got me to. So yeah, there's that. There's my life story, I guess. So I'm going to go to an ad break now, and then when I come back, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the role of mediumship for me now in my life and how I use it and how I don't use it. All right, so be right back. To quickly share with you some of the offerings that I have in my shop and some of my favorite readings to do for folks in case you are interested in having a private reading with me. So one of the things that I would like to share with you is my spirit guide portrait service. So basically what this is a portrait of your spirit guide, or one of your guides who is most prevalently working with you at this moment in time. It is an image that I create of them
using collage to show you who they are so you can see them. And I also bring in their main themes, their main signs, so you kind of get this picture of how they show up and the images that they're going to be showing you. And that is delivered as a digital portrait. So it's a digital file that you can then print off if you want to. I have had clients print it and frame it, put it in their bedroom, put it on their altar, frame it in their house, you know, put it on the wall. It is a great way to connect with your guide and to know who is there with you. That's something that I get asked a lot by people is, okay, I feel like I have someone, but how do I know who they are? How do I know how to call on them, what they look like, you know, those kind of things. So having a portrait of them can really help with that. There's also an optional reading to go with it, which gives you in-depth information about them. So their name, their main areas of focus, their main signs and symbols, what they're with you for, what they're helping you with, those kind of things. And that is usually a 2,000 plus word reading. It's written, and that introduces them too, so you can see who they are, what's going on there. So you either get the option to just have the portrait if you want to, you know, delve in and get to know them yourself, or you also have the option for a written reading if you want a little bit more to kick off with and a bit more information. And I've heard really wonderful things about these portraits, and I feel really blessed by that. People saying that it has really helped them connect with their guide, really feel their guide, know who they're talking to, build a spiritual relationship with them, build a feeling of security and safety and being protected. So I love doing those. They're one of my favorite things to do. I've not seen anyone else do them in the same style or the same kind of way that I do. My guides actually asked me to start doing them a couple of years ago, and so I started doing it, and that's what that is. I also love doing spirit guide readings, which is kind of like the written reading aspect there, without the portrait. I actually do those as a recording, so that's either one or three guides who are working with you at this point in time. What their areas of focus are, their areas of expertise, what kind of guide they are, what their name is. Sometimes some guides won't give me a name, but usually I can get something, you know, what they look like. It's basically like if I was describing the portrait. So there's that option. There's also an option to do that with animals, and also plants. So there's lots of different guides that we can have, and you can focus in if you want on one particular type of guide. So I love doing those readings. I also have had a lot of people asking me recently about pet readings. So you might have seen, if you follow me online, that I also do readings for pets, either, you know, in person, I meet the pet, they come into the store when I'm at the Four of Wands, and I meet them and read for them. I can also do it long distance, just like people. I usually just use the picture and their name. And I love doing that. I love reading for animals. It can be really helpful if they are going through a hard time. Maybe you've recently lost, you know, a family member or a pet in the family, and your pet is struggling with it. You know, if they're anxious, if you've maybe moved house, if there's something going on with them and you're not entirely sure why. I mean, I would always recommend, please always take them to the vet if there's anything going on, you know, and you're worried about it. Please go see the vet, because it's really important. And if there's anything physical too happening, you know, just like with people, humans need medical attention and animals need medical attention. So please don't avoid doing that. But I think readings can work really well as a complementary kind of insight into them. And so I connect with their energy, I draw cards to them just like we do with a person, and we look into what's going on, how are they feeling, how can we help them, that kind of thing. So yes, I do offer animal readings, pet readings. They don't have to be pets, it can just be an animal, but usually it is a pet, in person or long distance. Yeah, please let me know if you're interested in that. So you can currently find all of my readings, apart from the pet one, I haven't put a listing up for that yet, but all of my readings on Etsy, but I am trying to move away from Etsy because the fees are so high. So if you want to go through Etsy, you can. That is the Sacred Cocoon at thesacredcocoon.etsy.com. But I prefer it done through PayPal or Venmo just because they take less money from me. And I do, this is my job and my profession, so it does, I appreciate being able to get as much as the money from it as I can. So if you send me an email is the best way to do it, which is thesacredcocoon@gmail.com. You can do it, send me a DM on Instagram, which is also thesacredcocoon, @thesacredcocoon, or on Facebook, which is also thesacredcocoon. And we can set something up privately to go through PayPal or Venmo. Yeah, honestly, it really does help me to be able to just, because Etsy takes about 10% of everything now, so it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot when, you know, I really try and keep my prices affordable, but on Etsy you kind of have to like alter it and make it a little higher just in order to get what you need from the listing. Does that make sense? So yeah, please do drop me a line if you're interested in those readings or any readings. You can, Etsy's a good place right now to see all the different ones that I do. You can also check me out, you know, on Instagram, or just ask me if I do something. I love making custom readings for people too, so whatever you've got going on, I can generally read for you. I do have some things that I won't read on, which is usually, you know, I won't read about death. I'm not going to tell you when you're going to die. I can't see it. I'm not allowed to see it. You won't be allowed to see it. I won't tell you. I won't read if it seems malicious to someone else. So, you know, look at why you want the reading. Is it to help you, or is it to try and understand, like, is it focused on someone else in a negative way? And there's a few other things, like health. I don't like to make like predictions about health and that kind of thing, because that's not my area. That's not my jurisdiction. And it's not right. It's not right for me to give that information. I don't feel, so I won't do it. But other than that, whatever's going on for you, I would love to kind of look at it with you and read for you. So yeah, thank you for listening to this, and we will get back to the episode. Okay, and we're back. So what I'm going to talk about a little bit now is how I use mediumship now, and how it affects me, and what I will use it for and what I won't use it for. So I would like to do some more episodes where we go more into mediumship in general. This has really just been like how it's been for me personally. And I want to explain mediumship more and different types of mediums and how different people work and all that kind of thing. But for today, I'm really just going to stick to my own personal experience with it and my own, you know, feelings about what I will and won't do. So I would still describe myself as a medium because I do work with spirit guides. So spirit guides are in spirit. you know, if you want to think of it this way, they are dead. which is weird to me because most spirit guides in my experience haven't incarnated in a long time, so I don't think of them as being dead really. They're just in spirit, but spirit is where we go when we have died, so technically they're dead. And so, you know, since that's a big part of my work and I work with them every single day, I communicate with my guides every day, all of that, I am technically a medium. I also still do mediumship readings in a more traditional sense of connecting with someone's friend who's passed, their parent who's passed, their person in spirit who they want to connect with, which is much more of a traditional thing. I think most people don't think of spirit guides as mediumship necessarily, but it is.
I work with guides. I also work with like angels and all of that kind of thing, which I also think of as being in the same realm. They're still in spirit, although they're not technically dead because they've never been alive in the, you know, human sense, whatever. But I do also sometimes do, you know, mediumship sessions, which go more towards the person that you love who's passed over. I've also done pet mediumship, which is the same thing. If you've lost a pet, if they've passed over, communicating with them. Most mediumship that I do is, you know, what's their message for us? What do they want to tell us? They can be very comforting and healing to be able to reconnect with that person. They usually show images of, you know, their favourite things that they did with us, or what they're doing now, what they want to show us now, all that kind of thing. However, mediumship is not the thing that I really advertise, and to be completely honest, I actually don't really like doing it. So, it sounds odd. In a way, I guess, you know, it's like I have the ability to do it and I can do it, and I've done some really great mediumship readings. Like, I've had some wonderful clients come for them and who they've told me afterwards this really helped, and I love that it helps, but they're not really comfortable territory for me because I don't know. I don't find it always to be the most, I don't know how to even put it. I think it's because of the space that people are often in when they're seeking a medium that feels very vulnerable and raw, and it's like those people tend to be really mediums have a bad name a lot of the time, of like taking advantage of people and taking advantage of that pain, and I never ever want to do that, and it just makes me uncomfortable, the thought of it. I've had people come into my room and they are just so distraught and so upset, and unfortunately a lot of the time I found when people are just really, really still very distraught about something is they can't look at it from a particularly healthy place. They want to know, you know, are they still angry with me? If we've gone over to spirit and we've crossed over, no, I promise you, they are not angry with you. They love you so much. But people get really stuck on that. You know, what happened as soon as they died? You need to prove this to me. You need to prove that they're there. I've had people say that. And unfortunately, the thing is, I cannot prove it. I can't give you a physical thing and say, here is physical proof that you're dad is here or whatever, you know. It's I can't do it. Like, at the end of the day, you have to take what I'm saying and seeing and telling you, and you can either take it or not, but I cannot prove it to you. But if someone is stuck in needing the proof, it is very stressful for me because I'm then trying to get information and get images and things and then explain it to them in a way that it's proof. Spirit very often works in metaphors and images, so if they give me an image or a metaphor that you don't understand, you might not think that it's real, and it is, but I can't prove it. And it usually is, it's just not helpful, it's not useful, so I don't advertise it, because it's not going to be helpful for you, and completely honestly, it's not helpful for me. It makes me, like I said, it's so stressful. And it's upsetting, because then it gets into, well, this isn't real. And, I mean, you can tell me that what I'm doing isn't real. It's not going to really, at the end of the day, it doesn't affect me, because I know that I'm real, and I know that I'm being honest and truthful, and I operate from a place that I always want to be honest and truthful. So if you think what I'm doing isn't real, that's your experience, and that's fine. But it's still very heavy to have that in your space and try and deal with it. And then think about the fact that that's not the only person you're going to see that day, probably. You know, if I see someone and they come in and they're really upset and they didn't get anything out of the reading for whatever reason, and then I also have, you know, five other people who are all coming in there with their very emotional situations usually, and they need help, it's not... right, I find, for me to expend the energy on the mediumship session. It doesn't work. Sometimes I'll have people come through who are in spirit, and it's like an impromptu mediumship session, because I'm like, wait, hang on a second, this person's here and they're trying to tell you something, or they want to say something. And if I open up to that and say, you know, that's okay, then yeah, it can come through, and that's fine. And it's not, it's not a hard and fast rule. Like, I don't say I absolutely won't do mediumship. Like, it depends on the person. Usually, if we already have a relationship with each other, we already know each other, and we can discuss why you want to have this session, and I can get a feeling of whether you're in a good place for it or not, then, you know, I might do it. But it's so difficult to navigate the waters that I just don't like doing it. Like I said, I think working with spirit guides is also mediumship, but they're different to me. I don't call that mediumship, even though it technically is, and it's completely different. We usually don't have an extremely emotional, fraught relationship with our guides. We usually don't have that kind of very upset feeling towards them, so we're able to better receive from them without saying, I need it in this shape and form, I need it to be this thing. I think that's the issue. People put a lot of what they want it to be onto a mediumship session, and it's not necessarily going to be that. That person is going to show you and communicate with you in the way that they communicate. And then, not to mention that not everyone has crossed over, and I won't communicate with spirits that haven't crossed over. So that's an issue too. And I would hate to say to someone, I can't communicate with your dad because he's not crossed over, because then that's upsetting. You know, so it's a whole kettle of fish, which I don't understand that saying, but it's not my thing. Different mediums will work in different ways. Like, with my family, my dad, and I think it's mostly my dad's taking this up now because he's the main one in the family deals with this, but if someone's having a hard time crossing over, like they're coming to the end of their life and we know that they are dying but they're having a hard time letting go, my dad's team works as what I think of as the crossing guard. So they go, they're around the person, they help them when they pass, they help them go back to spirit. So my dad deals with that a little bit, but we don't really talk about it. Again, my dad is great if I go to him and say, hey dad, here's this thing. He knows what I'm talking about, he knows what to do, and it's great. But generally we don't really talk about it because he doesn't really do it that I'm aware of. He definitely doesn't do it professionally, and he knows I read, and he bought me my first cards. He's always known that I was a reader and all of that, but it's just not really something that we talk about. It doesn't cross over a lot. It's more of a private kind of thing. So yeah, I will do it occasionally, the mediumship. I'll do it, but it's not my favorite thing. I just don't find it's the most helpful tool in my personal practice. And like I said, there's so many different types of mediums and people are all different, so it's like, it might be great for you and it doesn't work for me, and what works for me might not work great for you. So that's the same thing, you know, it's whatever works for you. But generally speaking, I do not really advertise mediumship a lot of the time. And it's not the thing that I really, like, use as the big thing in my practice, I guess, even though technically, like I said, spirit guides are, it's technically mediumship. But, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to call it here now. I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope it wasn't too rambly. And I hope that it's enjoyable. Like I said before, if you want to contact me, you can do that through Instagram. It's where I'm most commonly at. That's at The Sacred Cocoon. You can also find me on Facebook, The Sacred Cocoon. You can find me on Etsy, thesacredcocoon.etsy.com. Or, like I said in the ad before, I really do prefer to do it privately, so through PayPal or Venmo. You can email me at thesacredcocoon@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram or message me on Facebook to set that up. We can do that. But you can always go through Etsy if you want to. It's there. It's available. And I do phone readings. I do in-person readings on Fridays and Saturdays at the Four of Wands. Highly recommend booking an appointment with me ahead of time because it gets hopping. And I never want to disappoint someone. But sometimes I can't see every single person who comes in. I just don't have time. So yeah, if you want to see me in person, please, yeah. Please come see me, come sit with me, let's get into it, but please book ahead if you can. Alright, sending you so much love, have a wonderful day, a wonderful rest of your week, and I will talk to you next week. Bye guys.